The following contest is scheduled for one fall. Please welcome Mr. Freds.
Listening to Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast.
What is going on, peeps? Welcome to episode 141 of the Fretzelmania podcast. I am the North American treasure, your second favorite Canadian, Mr. Fretz. This week and next, I am breaking down my top 10 matches of 2023 in proper Fretzelmania fashion with an old segment I used to do back in the day called Fretz's Fave 5. As you can hear with Big E's I Need 5 NXT theme song in the background. But first, I do have a few honorable mentions to go over before I get into part one of this list. Oh, and following this, I am off for the holidays. I'm done until 2024. So my honorable mentions include the men's and women's War Games matches. You know, my TV behind me is currently on mute. It is tuned into the WWE Network. The bump is on, and shortly after that will be yet another replay of Survivor Series War Games. The Blackpool Combat Club and Takeshita versus Eddie Kingston, Ishii, and the Elite from AEW New Japan Forbidden Door, which I attended. Awesome show. Darby Allin versus Samoa Joe on Dynamite from, I believe it was January, where they had the exposed ring and Darby Allin had like the spiked leather jacket. And I'll do only one more. Edge versus Demon Finn Balor, Hell in the Cell, WrestleMania. You had the return of the Demon coming up short yet again. Edge coming out in like this silver Slayer Punisher kind of mask. It was so friggin' badass. Yeah, those are my honorable mentions. Now to start the list off proper, number 10 from AEW Revolution, March 5th, 2023, from the Chase Center in San Francisco, California. We had Bryan Danielson versus Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF, in an Iron Man match for the AEW Championship. Well, this match, in my opinion, was where MJF was out to prove something. Now, Max, he's a great character. He's a fantastic heel. He's a shitty babyface, but regardless of that, he is gifted on the microphone. In the ring, we have seen him be good, passable. He can carry a great match, or someone else can carry him to a good match. I believe this match, Max was like, okay, I am out here to prove that I can actually effing wrestle, and that he can. Danielson, who you might see a little later on in this countdown, spoiler alert, is of course one of the greatest technicians that wrestling has ever seen. You know, this match wound up being a 4-3 win for MJF. So it was pretty good in terms of Iron Man match standards. I mean, HBK and Bret Hart had, I'm going to go out and say, the worst Iron Man match of all time, as who of the best performers of all time that they are, they gave us the most boring Iron Man match ever. So we had Bryan Danielson get a 2-0 lead following a Bisaku knee. I am going to get the name of that knee wrong and pronounce it wrong, so I'm just going to call it the flying knee. We had MJF getting blasted with the flying knee, and then MJF being disqualified after he hit Danielson with a low blow. And then MJF tied it up and got the 3-2 lead following a roll-up, another immediate pin following that roll-up, and the Heat Seeker. Danielson submitted MJF to a Regal stretch, and Regal was kind of a focal point, in a way, of the build-up to this match. Around this time, or just shortly before, William Regal left to go back to the WWE after having a few run-ins with Max and with the Blackpool Combat Club before he made his exit. Of course, we had the reference of William Regal scouting MJF in NXT and then saying kind of, hey, you know, you need a little bit more seasoning. You're not quite ready yet. Why don't you kind of call us later? Or something happened with their relationship. And in one of Regal's last appearances with AEW, of course, MJF, I believe, attacked him. And then, because MJF is a veteran of No Mercy, he pressed A and B in his special mode by making Danielson submit to his own LaBelle lock. So this was a phenomenal back and forth match. I only watched it once. I think this was the last AEW pay-per-view I actually paid to order. Well, other than the one I paid to attend live. And yeah, from the rest of the card had passable to very good matches in it. And this was chief among them. This was a fantastic match. It was a great story being told between Max and Danielson, where again, Max, he was out to prove that he is a wrestler. So with that LaBelle lock, unbeknownst to me, because I'm just going through the rest of this wiki, MJF hit Danielson with an oxygen tank. And then, of course, that's when he had the LaBelle lock locked in. Danielson taps out, and it's 4-3 for Max. This was some good shit here. Fantastic near fall spots. Fantastic Max being a phenomenal prick. Danielson not being an underdog, but matching Max's intensity. And, well, MJF also matching the intensity of Danielson as well. Phenomenal spots with like a spider superplex, a diving head, but we had the Regal stretch, of course. We had a technical masterclass. And now, like MJF, now I look at him, consider him another great technical wrestler in AEW. One of the few bright spots left in that company, because honestly, since Forbidden Door, I haven't been loving much of AEW. Yeah, Adam Copeland is there. At the night that I'm recording this, AEW is going to have Dynamite in Montreal. He'll have a match with Christian. Guaranteed it's going to have a dusty finish, and we're going to go on to Revolution 2024 and have another title match. Like I can smell that one coming a mile away. Great match. Now on to number 9. Where the reason I put this match at number 9 is for one thing. The crowd. This took place at Backlash 2023 in San Juan, Puerto Rico, where he had Bad Bunny versus Damian Priest in a San Juan street fight. Now, I'm not a fan of Bad Bunny's music. It's not my genre, but I respect his hustle. I respect the game. I respect his popularity, especially in the Hispanic community, and especially amongst us in Wrestle Addict Radio and the friends of Wrestle Addict Radio, people like Issa the Demon Diva, who was, of course, there in person, being a native of Puerto Rico. And this was just your typical plunder, hardcore match with your weapon spots, your kendo sticks, your steel chairs, your ring posts, the table bumps, the shopping cart full of weapons. You know, Bad Bunny coming out to his single, Chambia. I apologize to the Hispanic community for butchering that. And paying an homage to the late, great New Jack by pushing a shopping cart full of weapons into the ring. Wikipedia reading here. So Priest performed a chokeslam on Bad Bunny. However, during the pin attempt, Priest attacked Bad Bunny's shoulders, thus avoiding the pin. And then you had your classic big man versus little man spots. Priest and Bunny are no strangers to each other. Of course, in WrestleMania's past, I believe it was 37 in a row. Yeah, the first not COVID WrestleMania, we had Bad Bunny and Damian Priest taking on The Miz and John Morrison. This, of course, where we had that bunny hop thing with The Miz and the Easter Bunny suit. And there was a parody rap video that was making fun of him. It's completely slipping through the cracks, and I forget entirely what that premise is. So we had a whole whack of shenanigans in this match, and because this involved Damian Priest, as is tradition, the Judgment Day has to get involved. However, Bad Bunny also had a few tricks up his sleeve, having allies in the form of the LWO, that is, back when the LWO was a thing, Santos Escobar, Cruz del Toro, Joaquin Wilde. They all came out here to help clear out the Judgment Day. We also had an appearance from Savio Vega, Puerto Rican wrestling god himself, the former Quang, the former Los Boricua, making his first appearance in the Fed since the 2020 Survivor Series, that whole awkward thank you Undertaker retirement, non-retirement kind of spiel. That it was weird, but because it was in the Thunderdome, and in my mind, they should have kind of saved that for his actual Hall of Fame induction the following year and a half later. And even more shockingly, we had an appearance from a former WWE superstar, another Caribbean wrestling legend, that is Carlito, the son of controversial, I should say, wrestling personality Carlos Colon. And I don't need to tell you why that Carlos Colon is controversial. You've seen Dark Side of the Ring. You have the internet. Go look it up. Carlito, his first appearance since the February 2021 episode of Raw and his surprise appearance in the Thunderdome Royal Rumble. Remember, that was a thing. He hasn't had a singles match on TV since, I think, like the mid-aughts, because he was released in like 2012, maybe, something like that. But again, the crowd made this match. WWE has to go back to Puerto Rico again. Another PLE. Hell, give them a WrestleMania. I mean, give Toronto a WrestleMania first, but man, this is a wrestling crowd. And if you know your Puerto Rican wrestling history, which I don't, their crowds are always phenomenal. So We had all your weapon spots. We had all your shenanigans with the Judgment Day. You had Bad Bunny hitting in the figure four and the figure four getting locked in Puerto Rico. I mean, come on. That's Ric Flair versus Carlos. That's God rest his soul. That's Bruiser Brody. That's royalty. You got the sliced bread number two for a near fall. You had Bad Bunny getting the Canadian Destroyer, which, being a Canadian, I can give permission to rename it the Bunny Destroyer or the Puerto Rican Destroyer on Priest to win this match. You had Bad Bunny and the LWO celebrating, waving a Puerto Rican flag with the rest of the folks there with Carlito and Savio. It was such a cool moment. And that's why I love this match so much. I went back and watched like a fan footage of it on YouTube. I watched a couple of the matches I'm going to be talking about here, but man, the crowd made this one special. Number eight, however, is a match I put in at as high as it is for the sheer shock factor of it. And this one took place at Crown Jewel just a couple of months ago in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. And that was Solo Sikoa versus John Cena. Now, Fretz, why do you have this match above these other two? Those other two matches were better from an in-ring perspective. Well, yes. In-ring is just part of mine and possibly yours enjoyment of pro wrestling. This was another moment kind of match, but it was more of a shock factor. So John Cena hasn't had a singles win on pay-per-view since like 2018, 2019, something ridiculous like that. And we all thought that this was when John was finally going to get a win under his belt and go back to Hollywood, as the writer's strike was just about to wrap up by this point, and ride high and maybe come back around for a rematch with Solo at WrestleMania, which I still think is going to happen. However, after a couple of hope spots, after your five moves of doom, your attitude adjustment, your five knuckle shuffles, your STFU, Solo pushed through all of that and then went into beast mode and hit John Cena with 11 Samoan spikes. Just boom. And then picked him up again, hit him again, and then picked him up and then just spammed the X button, just spammed it, decimating John Cena. 11 in total Samoan spikes in this match. Not even Super Cena, who would like kick out of a pile driver on exposed concrete and eat the entire Nexus by himself, could withstand that. And Solo stands alone above a prone John Cena, winning this match in, I should say, fairly dominant fashion. Again, Cena had his hope spots, but Solo was just too much for him. And I'm going to do a little bit of fantasy booking here. Maybe this is my opinion, but this should have happened at the hands of the late, great Umaga at that street fight they had at Royal Rumble 2007. That should have gave Umaga the title. And yeah, maybe he can drop it in the chamber and have a quick transitional run with it. But that's just my mind here. Number seven. Now, this one was really tough to pin down which match I was going to put here between these two and how high I was going to put it. Lesnar versus the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, from SummerSlam 2023. Second match on the card. Now, this has been a feud that's been building since the night after WrestleMania, where Cody was unsuccessful at finishing his story against Roman Reigns, thanks to Solo Sikoa and the Bloodline. However, Cody had backup to counteract the Tribal Chief. Or so he thought. Because at the start of their alleged tag team match they're going to have, Raw after WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar turned on Cody, just hit him with an F5, and bailed. You know, they did have a match at Backlash, which was very, very good. So Cody barely squeaking out a win here. It was a good job, but I thought in my mind that the SummerSlam match was far better. And it was yet another great story in the never-ending story of Cody's chapter or novel. It might as well be like a Tom Clancy novel at this point, Cody's story. Let's wrap this shit up, okay? So you had this match. Thank you, Wiki. Rhodes attacked Lesnar at the start of the match. However, Lesnar responded with a suplex. Surprise. Rhodes mounted an offensive comeback. Lesnar countered and dominated Rhodes. Then we had Lesnar throwing out Rhodes out of the ring for a count-out victory. However, Rhodes broke the count twice. Lesnar taunted Rhodes. We had the F5 at ringside. We had the 9 count. So Cody got back into the ring. F5 through the announce table. However, Super Cody, the new Super Cena, still broke the count at 9. Was this a last man standing match? No, it was not. It was a regular singles match. But Lesnar was trying to win any way he could, even by count out, even by yeeting him through a table, even with the German suplexes, the steel steps, the God knows what else, the Kimura lock, another F5. But Rhodes sent Lesnar into the exposed turnbuckle. And Cody, who was also a veteran of No Mercy, also pressed A and B on his controller to lock in Lesnar's own Kimura lock. However, Brock managed to counter. And in the end, Lesnar attempted an F5, but Cody countered into 3 crossroads to win this match. And an even bigger shock in my mind is after this match. Lesnar uncharacteristically endorses Cody, showing him the proper respect, and we haven't seen Brock since. I think he could wind up being a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble. Maybe Cody's throwing everybody out. Out comes number 30, and it's Brock. I mean, Cody beat Brock, what, twice on paper? Did he beat him 3 times? On pay-per-view this year. I know they had at least 2 singles matches on a PLE. I'm not going to go back and watch that because I'm just about done part 1. And speaking of, rounding out this week's Fave 5 and my number 6 match of 2023, also from SummerSlam, we had Bianca Belair versus Charlotte Flair versus Asuka for the WWE Women's Championship. Asuka recently won the title, returning and beating the snot out of champion Bianca. Charlotte Flair had been back in the WWE for a very short period of time leading up to this. And of course, as is tradition, she's a Flair. She's in the title picture. We saw a whole whack of hope spots. We saw a bunch of finisher spots here with these three. We had the figure eight. We had an Oscar lock. We had several attempts for the KOD. You had that one move that you have to avoid, and it's the damn kiss of death, the KOD by Bianca. The finishing sequence of this match is one of the most creative things I have seen in some time. So we have Flair tossing Belair over the top rope. Belair lands on the steel stairs, hurting and selling her knee. Asuka put Flair down with a backslide for a near fall, and at the same time, the trainers and the referees were helping Bianca leave the ringside area. Then in the ring, Charlotte speared Asuka for a near fall. Charlotte puts Asuka in the figure eight, but Belair returns to the ring, 450 splash on Flair for a near fall. Then we get Belair avoiding the chops, goes for the KOD, but Flair rolls out of it. Back in the ring, Asuka returned and blew mist into Flair's face, I believe aiming for Bianca. Asuka threw a kick at Bianca, who ducks it. And then while still being in the figure eight, this whole thing was when Asuka was in the figure eight, Bianca hits an inside cradle and wins the title. But oh no, this is not the end, because this is the match where Io Sky cashed in her money in the bank, hitting the over the moonsault onto Bianca and winning the championship. The pure chaos from the injury spot to the blue mist to cradling while being in a submission hold, and Charlotte couldn't do a damn thing about it, which made it even sweeter. It's not quite my favorite women's match of the year. You're going to have to wait until next week to find out what that is when I round out my Faye 5 matches of the year. Top 10 part 2 coming next week, or when I record it in a couple of minutes, but y'all aren't going to know that. Oh crap, I'm still recording, aren't I? Hey, thank you very much for listening, folks. You can follow me on all the social medias, from Blue Sky Threads, Twitter, Instagram, at Fretzelmania. That's FRETZLE-mania. This podcast is available on Russell Addict Radio. Say it with me, kids. The cure for the common wrestling podcast. Follow @addict_Russell on Twitter, where I am sometimes live tweeting wrestling shows when I feel like it, when I can, and when I'm able. Listen to the rest of us, the Kings of the Rings podcast. I was on last week with Smiley, shout out to Smiley, and we talked about CM Punk's return at Survivor Series, and Smiley, being a Chicago native, bought something much more interesting to the table than I have, being a lifelong fan of CM Punk. Although they are both currently on a little bit of a break, you got Mr. YLP himself with the Young Lions perspective. I believe has been dropping Young Lions Journey podcasts that talk about his mental health. I believe one of them was about shame and one of them was about abandonment. Zach, I'm sorry I haven't gotten to listening to them quite yet, but I'll try to get to them when I can. And Mr. YLP, I hope that you are doing well, and I hope that you join us soon when you're able. It was actually really good to connect with him on the Russell Addict Radio Discord during Survivor Series. That was a fun gong show. And also the man that joined us, who is also on our network, also on a little bit of a break, is Nate from the Brace for Impact podcast, my good brother from another good mother, former Game Changer podcast co-host, who you may hear on Fretzelmania a couple of times in the new year. Well, until next time, folks, TTFN, ta-ta for now, and keep your stick on the ice.
This has been a Russell Addict Radio branded podcast.